So is that hot tin roof still as hot as ever, Richard?
Well, I think we're going to wait for next week to give it justice, or do it justice if we're to fit in Edinburgh, but it's certainly as hot as ever. You wait until you see Jack O'Connell and the inimitable Sienna Miller. Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, yes.
Splendid.
Let's report next week on it. And if I may go straight to Edinburgh, and indeed, a fascinating, absolutely extraordinary festival. I mean, the program is, if it can be called thus, it's almost a book on its own. It's so heavy, it's quite difficult to carry. Very large numbers, we all know, of the various shows tend to be comedies. There is a cornucopia of musicals as well. I went first to Holyrood House, which, of course, absolutely fascinates me. My ancestor, Robert Milne, was Master Mason under Charles II, and he's actually signed it. Sir William Bruce was the architect. And the Queen's Gallery has, which is next door, has an exhibition, very interesting, this I had never seen one before, about the work of Roger Fenton in the Crimea, because this was such a unique experience that he was able to convey some of the desolation and horror of it to the British public, even though he was only in the Crimea for a relatively short time, from March to June 1854. And there is amongst these photographs what is considered by some to be the first recorded photograph of, it's an officer who appears to be suffering from shell shock. It's powerful, bleak stuff.
All sounds good, and in fact, we'll probably we'll touch base with William Coles, also from the Edinburgh Festival, in the very near future. Richard, are you back in Edinburgh? Have you just come back from Edinburgh? I mean, what's the sort of
idea? Just back, and to just give you a little bit of a rundown, one of the fascinating plays, it was here about 4 years ago, Miss Julie, by the Baxter Theatre of Cape Town, which transports Strindberg's play of love and lust and class into post-apartheid South Africa, which mesmerizing results. It was at the Riverside Theatre in London where I caught it first. I mean, I can only describe it as an electrifying portrayal of interracial love and hate. Extraordinary. It does lose just a little in a larger theatre because at the Riverside it was more intimate, but my goodness me, what an epic work. And also a play, not about heroes, about the friendship whilst they were in the hospital for those traumatised in the First World War, between Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen. That is a very powerful play, and I'm hoping to take it on tour if you have a chance to see it. It really, really is good. The Portable Dorothy Parker, we had the wit, the wisdom, a little bland when there could have been more laughs, but certainly good fun because she always was. She's deciding what to include in a book about which she's writing, containing her best witticisms. Lord Dismiss Us, echoes of Lindsay Anderson's If, set in a public school in the 1960s where there's a homophobic headmaster. Rather good, actually, a little long, but I was chatting to some of the cast afterwards and said this reminded me of Anderson's classic, which won at Cannes, and they said it was the first thing they were asked to see before they, or when they were rehearsing for the roles.
Exactly.
Girls like that. Now, the dangers of sexting. This is a marvellous, it's an ensemble, it's so well rehearsed. I was so impressed by the way this was choreographed. Set in a girls' school, and what can happen when certain images go viral. A play, which in fact is thought-provoking as well as tremendously entertaining, and it's got these messages which are very disturbing. A play about obsession, Harry, which I rather enjoyed, and also an hour which portrayed what happened when Chamberlain was about to broadcast the declaration of that Britain was at war. Chamberlain, Peace in Our Time, very well done, punctuated by some fine musical interludes from the period. And we see a Prime Minister who has failed. The First World War gives you an indication as to why he wished peace as he did, but faithfully, of course, as we know, he trusted Hitler. So that is a with a visit to the National Gallery, which is under refurbished part of it's under refurbishment, and glorious portraits such as Gainsborough's The Honourable Mrs. Graham or Reynolds, the card players. The National Gallery in Edinburgh gives you a very good guide to a whole series of famous periods in art. They really have a good collection. And their National Portrait Gallery, very interesting again, and reminded of the great Scottish artists, Raeburn and Wilkie and Ramsay, going to these galleries. So the whole city came alive. The river forecast was terrible, but it hardly rained at all. So I was able to see so much in the streets too, where again you see parts of the performances and so on.
It clearly made the journey north of the border just that bit more worthwhile. We've had a text in from Katie Grimmison, who's listening in Birmingham. Hello, Katie. Hopefully you got Phil Learis' special dedication to you in the early part of the programme. If not, just listen again to the podcast. Richard Fitzwilliams, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I most certainly have.
Reporting from the Edinburgh Festival, giving thumbs up to Atomic Blonde and Portrait, and a little tease ahead, but I haven't forgotten that I did promise the prediction for next week's Richard Fitzwilliams line, which I'm pretty much guaranteed he will give thumbs up to and say this is outrageously wonderful. Directed by Catherine Bigelow, I sense Detroit might well be
and
only
do you,
scenario.
You're on really good form, I have to tell you, because it was only yesterday I was at the press conference for that very movie.
Wow.
And in fact asked Catherine Bigelow a question about what I called her brilliant trilogy, docudramas, The Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty, and Detroit.
Exactly. So you see, we're on the case. You know, it was like to feel that we're sort of on the case from that perspective, and I'm pretty sure I'll enjoy Detroit. If enjoy is the right word, I'll probably say...
I would assure you that whilst you're watching what goes on, you most certainly will sweat, if not like those who were involved in this horrific racist incident. Mm. The facts are that she has this extraordinary knack of bringing this claustrophobic docudrama. It's a feel, it's immersive, and she manages it so well. I mean, for me, The Hurt Locker, as I told her, was one of the most brilliant war films ever made, and Detroit would most certainly not disappoint. It's exceptionally good, but more next week.
They say a restless body can hide a peaceful soul. A voyager and a settler, they both have a distant goal. If I explore the heavens, or if I search inside, well, it really doesn't matter, as long as I can tell myself I've always tried.
Yes, move on, as those Spurs supporters will be saying once we had the delights of what was John Joe Shelby thinking? I don't know, maybe the only person who can actually tell us what was John Joe Shelby thinking on the Sunday game where Rafa Benitez's men celebrated the joys of Mike Ashley's tremendous budget for new signings by having a glorious 2-0 a reverse against Tottenham Hotspurs. Ian Lennox, how does it feel to be back in the big leagues?
Not too good at the moment.
It's okay. I mean, you know, I obviously haven't mentioned anything about our Brighton correspondent Ben because he's over in Crewe, always settling up on that side of things. But that went pretty much according to plan. Regrettably, I do think that obviously there's still 37 odd games to actually go. But it would seem that Jose Mourinho seems to have set up a marker, shall we say, for his Manchester United side, which is a little bit concerning. Other than that, people can't defend. Did you enjoy the game, though, Ian?
Not particularly. It wasn't a particularly exciting game. And I hate watching 11 play against 10, to tell the truth, at either side, you know. Yeah. I think one of the problems of football's got is there are far too many dismissals in the game.
So would it have effectively helped if Dele Alli had effectively been sent off as well, or would you have said, well, it was wrong? Or
he did nothing wrong, Dele Alli. I think Kane was very lucky to stay online. I was in front of that. Yeah. And the people defending him, i.e. the Tottenham supporters, none of them mentioned one salient fact, that when he tackled, he was off the ground. He had no control of what he was doing because he was actually in the air. And what happened was that Lejeune had ruffled him up. He'd spun the ball and he went in wildly.
Well, never mind.
He's not a dirty player by any means.
I sense you're a little bit down, so I'm going to try and buck you up, because this is what we do. This is what we do in the midweek drive. You know, I know Ollie and Obo have bossed the media in their own way, saying, and trying to actually, but you know, let's try and buck you up by saying that Phil Lynas has received the Ian Lennox text, The Brothers, which, as you know, I've been singing and shouting from the rooftops. I still think it's one of your finest ever works. I mean, they're all great, the Nets, the Sixties, etc. But The Brothers is there. Phil already has said he started reading it in the post office in the United States of America and could barely put it down. It was so good. So he's sort of saving looking so far.
I think his dad's an avid reader as well. He gives them to his dad.
Well, there you are. You see, these are the sort of critical points there. So we will get that Hollywood deal made. Yes. Whilst there's breath in these lungs, I will say that the Midweek Drive Morning Edition will get an Ian Lennox movie sorted through. It's marvellous stuff. Tessa Snart has also confirmed that she's able to rejoin the show in about 50-odd minutes in that time from now, where she can reflect on the whole sort of things. And quite rightly, I have to eat a certain amount of humble pie here, because she did actually acknowledge me in the one-year anniversary of Sound and Country Vision. I thought she'd left me off, basically. Apparently, she just couldn't tag me or all these kind of Facebook things, really, but still, it's quite all right. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we don't do the thing for the glory, and we do it for the love and appreciation of happiness and joy.
Does money not mend into it, no?
I suppose it could if you feel like such things, but ultimately, what's money except the transfer of energy from one soul to another? It's different line entirely. How is life in Newcastle at this moment, though?
Very sunny at the moment, actually. I'm a bit suspicious.
Yeah, well, in the official line, and we'll give this again after the 9 o'clock news, is that in Lincoln, cloudy with outbreaks of rain, sunny spells with scattered showers in the afternoon. So highs of 23 degrees centigrade, lows of 15 degrees centigrade. So it goes. Family life, Ian.
Have you noticed this summer how often the short-term weather forecast has been inaccurate? No?
Yes.
It's just
yes.
Up here. Maybe it's just me, I don't know. It seems to have changed. There's been a few days where we've not done things because of the weather forecast and found that we should have done, and vice versa, yeah.
Well, never mind. Dr. Polly Russell, Curator of Public Life at the British Library, will be talking about a recent We Are Family campaign which aims to address the misrepresentation of real families by the media, and also the negative impact that it's having on families by depicting honest modern-day family life as it really is in 2017. For example, over half of British parents consider eating together being one of the core components of being a family. However, in reality, more than a third of parents actually spend their evenings preparing two different meals, as children eat earlier and parents obviously eat later.
Oh, really?
So, yes, so, you know, there's the kind of notion of let's all sit down, let's have some family time.
I rather feared, you know, because I'm all past all that now at my age, but I rather feared that the family meal is something of the past, you know,
But surely,
Ian, you know, fast food and went off somewhere.
From your own perspective, I mean, as somebody who, you know, if you were an Eskimo, you're not yet ready to be put out into the wilderness to actually go and wander into the cold. You know, you should be seen as the sage and wonderful avuncular personality that can feed in the wisdom of centuries to, you know, the
centuries. I'm not that old.
Oh, I think. When were you born? 20th century. What are we now? 21st century.
Yeah, fair enough.
Hence plural. Wisdom of centuries. I'm in the same position, Ian. You know, I mean, yeah. This is the
main, you are, if they're 17.
Well, yeah, so, you know, it's all that sort of way forward. And you know, it's only, so what, 70 years and a couple of days ago that India declared independence and effectively celebrated
yeah,
it.
I thing know,
so, you know, just goes to show. Other sort of lines, which is interesting, that 16% of people surveyed in Britain say that social posts make their children seem happier than they really are, as well as making them. So social posts make you seem happier than they
what
really
are. What are social posts? What's that mean?
It's those Facebook things, Ian. Those Instagram things.
Know.
Those areas was a. Do you feel?
No one ever sort of says, "Oh, I'm depressed today," on Facebook, doesn't
it? Oh, I've seen that quite a few times, actually. Or maybe it's just the kind of area that I've sort of associated.
Anyway,
with.
Yeah, I never really.
And on that basis alone, you think, oh, that's it. And over a third of people feel that television shows are the main culprit for misrepresenting modern family life, closely followed by advertising. Is it all your fault, Ian? Is it the fault of Tyne's television that effectively it's the misrepresentation of Supergran that actually led and the range of other sort of factors, including the first ever World Cup winners and all those Catherine Cookson shows that effectively have misrepresented family life?
I don't know. I know I did the last interview with Catherine Cookson.
Mm-hmm.
She was just before her 90th birthday.
Yeah.
And she had a mind like a razor.
That's
not what we're talking about, yes, it was.
No, it isn't. But, you know, it's worth noting because, you know, we continue ever onwards. But interesting enough.
Yep. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Elvis Presley today.
Well,
the 40th anniversary.
Do you know, I was, strangely enough, you've obviously been looking at the script and, you know, there's somebody who's, if ever you wanted to actually have a perfect family life, if you weren't going to go for Michael Jackson, you would choose the King. Is there a particular Elvis track you'd like us to sort of run for you now?
Yes. Loving You.
Loving You. So we're working our way through this whole system.
Feeling that jailhouse rock. And I'll tell you a reason for that is that my sister used to help me do the housework. She's a rabid Elvis fan, and I used to put jailhouse rock on because we worked twice as quickly.
Well, I think we've sorted that. Forget the Loving You. Let's open.
Okay.
Let's open that jailhouse.
Purple gang, let's rock. Everybody, let's rock. Everybody, get my kick that rock. Everybody let's rock. Everybody in old cell block. Put Danny to the jail, let's rock. Danny to the jail, let's rock.
You see, you play some Jailhouse Rock by Elvis the Pelvis, and automatically our very own siren pelvis, John Wenham, arrives. How are you, John?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Are you an Elvis fan? Were you an Elvis fan? Is that a case of no Elvis?
I liked Elvis in his later... I liked his ballads and...
I agree with that, yes.
Lighter music. I think his rock and roll days were a bit over the top sometimes.
I think one of the problems was a lot of them were in films, I think, and the soundtrack wasn't really good.
Wasn't very good?
No, they had recording standards weren't... apparently, I'm told this by people who... know what they're talking about, I'm told, so... incidentally, do you remember the opera singer, is it Timmy K. Konara? She was asked who was the greatest singer she ever heard, and she said undoubtedly, the young Elvis Presley.
Yes, the young Elvis Presley. As to be a sort of not confused with the young Mario Lanza, you know, the young Chuck Berry, and other sort of rock and roll.
I think she's referring to his younger days, when the work he did then.
Yes. So, can you remember what you were doing when Elvis Presley's death was announced on British media?
I can remember. Funnily enough, my sister, my eldest sister, Pat, was a great fan of his. So I had to, obviously, I had to decry him. I remember getting up in the morning when he was on the... put the radio on, and the news of his death came through, and the first thing I thought about was her, actually.
I actually heard it on the evening announced by Tony Prince on Fab 208 Radio Luxembourg when the Immortal Awards were used. Sadly, ladies and gentlemen, the King is dead. Don't remember where I was when Kennedy was assassinated, because you know, that's when Doctor Who was obviously sorting in all sorts of other areas there. But John, do you remember where you were when Elvis Presley passed away 40 years ago today?
Yes, I remember it well, because I was over in Skegness when I heard it.
Home of so many Elvis impersonators.
Well, I was over there with my wife at the time, and we heard it. I think we'd nipped into a pub somewhere for lunch, and we heard it on the television there.
Well, got to see what... Elvis track Tessa Snart would like us to do.
There's a big debate on Facebook yesterday, but I got involved in, because somebody, a lot of people said that if it didn't really like it very much, thought it was overrated. One bloke in particular said he thought it was about an average club singer. And I thought, that's just ridiculous, you know.
It is ridiculous.
So I got involved in the discussion.
Quite right, too. In fact, I'll try and find that. As we sort of go through a variety of other bits and pieces as well. Discussing the notion of Elvis Presley, I did say that as Tessa is returning to the programme, if she is listening to this, her little challenge is to find out an Elvis Presley number that we might be able to play here on Siren. There's so many things we've actually got. If I Can Dream, I Was the One, Follow That Dream, Heartbreak Hotel, Blue Moon, of course, Always on My Mind, American Trilogy, a whole heap of other areas. So let's see if we can go for Tessa's choice, given that her earlier selection of Galveston for Glen Campbell was put into touch by the team who effectively filled in us. And Shane McKenzie.
My favourite is... on the Phoenix one.
By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
The Phoenix, yes.
Yes, yeah. I'll be rising from the ashes.
Apparently...
She'll be waking.
Sorry?
She'll be waking. She might not,
when he heard the song, apparently, it reminded him of a journey he'd done, a similar journey he'd done to home, and he was in tears when he heard. So he asked to record it, and that was how it all took off.
Ian, sorry, are you happy to stay with us for a few moments after the news and work through that before we actually go and take our little Whitport music festival scenario together? Musicport, I should say. Whitby, I must say it's Whitport. It's Musicport, so we'll find out more about that. We'll have some new stuff. In fact, we might even dig out another Elvis Presley number for yourself, or possibly even we'll find another Glen Campbell thing. Let's just celebrate the whole elements that we're actually doing here. And it's you two and B.B. King with When Love Comes to Town, which is going to ramp us out for this first little programme. I know they've already started. They will not be stopped. They'll continue in the classic Bamba Gascoigne, Jeremy Paxman way, up to the news and far away. Came to town. That's what you done when I had a kid to scream. The notes were turning blue. I was dazing in a dream. This music the weather today. Highs of 23 degrees centigrade, lows of 15 degrees centigrade, cloudy with outbreaks of rain, sunny spells with scattered showers in the afternoon.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. 'Cause I've left that girl so many times before. By the time I make Albuquerque, she'll be working. She'll probably stop at lunch and give me a call. But she'll just hear that phone keep on ringing off the wall. That's all. By the time I make Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll turn softly and call my name out low. And she'll cry just to think I'd really leave her. Though time and time I've tried to tell her so, she just didn't know I would really go.
That one was for you, Ian Lennox.
Thank you very much.
There you are, you see. Who ever said that we don't sometimes play requests and dedications on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition? Probably somebody.
Well, brilliant lyrics, I think.
Exactly. Mostly overwhelmed. Which brings us neatly round to the fact where we invite your good self and John Wenham to become the cultural critics of another songstress that we're about to actually launch once more upon the world. I'm going to give you three choices, Ian, and you get the decision in terms of what you're going to actually hear in a few moments. They are Where the Boys Are, Shoop Shoop, as in the Shoop Shoop song, It's in His Kiss, or Puppy Love. Where are you going to go? Puppy Love, Shoop Shoop, or Where the Boys Are?
Puppy Love.
Puppy Love. John, would you agree with that?
I do agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. This is Leanie Jane, and she'll be awaiting your critical views of her incarnation of course, the Jimmy Young classic, and then, of course, latterly done by Donny Osmond, Puppy Love.
And they called it puppy love. Oh, I'll guess they'll never know how a young heart really feels and why I love him so. And they called
Don't worry, Ollie and Oboe, we know your cats.
Sorry,
we were just at Ian. What did you make of Leedy Jane and Puppy Love?
I quite liked it. It's quite a pleasant sound. And, I think one of the things, it's an old song, isn't it? It's been recorded a long time
40
ago.
40 or 50 years ago, as we said, Jimmy Young, actually.
And I don't know whether the song actually stands the test of, you know, not to follow the singer or the radio.
But even the way in which Donny Osmond, and it was echoed there by Leedy Jane, says, "Someone help me! Help me, help me, please." Emotionally overwhelmed. John Wenham.
Yeah, I liked it, and I liked the fact that the accompaniment wasn't overbearing.
That's right,
sometimes it can be in these sort of remakes of the...
Well, something you'll be able to...
It knew its place, didn't it?
So it did,
The background music knew its place.
Yes.
Good stuff. So there we are. So we can at least welcome Leedy Jane onto the programme and know that she won't be sort of cast to one side. I think he hated it. It's very important. So Ian Lennox, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have, thank you.
Cool, we'll give you an extended one, a bit of a rollover, because the last few weeks we've been having to squeeze you into the whole sort of thing.
Doesn't matter.
Well, no, it is important. I just realised, of course, that because you haven't been in Canada this year, we as yet haven't had Arthur McKenzie off the bench, so to speak.
Oh, yes.
So
Arthur's got a very important task to do soon.
Right.
He's going to read us the third version of my book.
I like to feel as though I read the first one and a half or second version of the book, so at least I read part
of it. Yeah, you've got first go, yes.
Marvellous, that's very good. So will you be back again with us next week, Ian
Lennox? Do hope so, yes.
Splendid. Limmy and the Family Cooking, starting off a sequence of families before we go into Dr. Polly Russell, Curator of Public Life at the British Library.
When you got the magical feeling.
can. You can do magic. John, do you feel that modern media reflects family life accurately, or would you say no? I see nothing on television in any way, shape or form that reflects the life of the Wenham household.
Well, exactly. I agree with... I don't think it does reflect it accurately.
Right.
I think the soaps tend to overemphasise any problems that...
43% of British folk feel that portrayal of family life in society in the media is unattainable, and for a quarter, the lack of representation of a family makeup they can relate to in popular culture leads them to believing other families are happier, with 90% saying that leaves them feeling negative about themselves and their family. Minutes past 9 o'clock in Lincoln, England. work it out where you happen to be. I'm sure you can actually calculate that. And it's only a matter of time before we move to Dr. Polly Russell, Curator of Public Life at the British Library, to actually talk about these family issues. And again, the whole work of being part of the co-presentational team on BBC Two's Living History series, Back in Time for Dinner, of course, which is a wonderful example of how we like to stagger backwards into the future, looking longingly into the past.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good to mom. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
Ah, yes, the Osmonds, the Jacksons, the Partridges, the whole range of factors there. Of course, we could even actually add to that the soap classics of EastEnders, of Coronation Street and so on. They're all representations of family. And who better to actually talk about the reality of family life perhaps not being represented in popular culture than the fantastic curator of public life at the British Library, the all-round wonderful soul, who is Dr. Polly Russell. How are you, Polly?
Hello, very well, thank you.
Great to meet you as ever. Now, talking about this little survey that's come together that suggests that, yeah, when it comes to eating together, for instance, half of British parents would say that's one of the core components of being a family, and yet that notion of the family all eating together at the same time, that's all going as we're heading into the 21st century at pace.
Well, I think this survey that McCain have done is really interesting because I think it tells us two crucial things. I think, first of all, what it tells us is that the nature of family, or of what people identify as being family, is changing. And so what's really interesting, for instance, is in the East Midlands, close to 85% of people in that region who were surveyed felt that they have not seen a family like their own depicted in popular culture. So they don't recognise themselves or their own families as they're being depicted. So the one thing that this research tells us is that families are changing, how people understand families is changing. And then the second thing that the research gets at is this thing about meal times. What is the role of the meal time for families? And it seems to me it says two things. It says that meal times are still really important to people, or at least coming together, eating together as a family is a crucial way that families sort of perform being a family. 53% of people believe that. But that how they eat their meals may be changing, how they eat them as a family. So they may eat them around the table, but they might eat them in front of the television together, on the sofa. They may prepare different foods for different generations. So what is a family meal is changing, but eating together is still really significant.
Yeah. I mean, I remember obviously you mentioned McCain, who commissioned the survey, but the advertisement which said, "Daddy or chips? Daddy or chips?" I mean, I'm sure that was responsible for so many kind of arguments in terms of, they've gone for chips as opposed to daddy.
Well, I think that the other thing, actually, that's interesting is that the meal time, the sort of family meal time, almost has sort of mythical status, doesn't it? And it has this sort of sense around it that it's supposed to be this idealized, sort of joyful experience. And what the research suggests, and in fact what most people's experience suggests, is that actually mealtimes, although we think they're important and we do come together and eat, are often fraught with kind of tension and debate and the kind of rambunctiousness of family life.
Mm. You've also got the position as well. I mean, if we look back over the notion of the patriarchy and the family at the head of the table, where sits the father, we have the notion of where things are put together, the cooking is done in certain lines. And I suppose you could almost say from an American perspective that the line that, you know, everything is sorted out in a mealtime, whether it's the Cartwright family in Bonanza, whether it's the Barclays in the Big Valley, any of those sort of lines. In the studio, Polly, we have John Wenham here. John, who is in his eighth decade, I believe.
Eighth decade in the plan.
John, from your own perspective, in time in Rhodesia and Lincolnshire and so on, does what Polly's been talking about kind of gel with life in the Wenham household?
Yes, I think probably it does in the mainstream. Because when I was out abroad, I was a single person and I was living in a police camp. We had sort of communal meals, but we had them when we wanted between certain hours, if you mean. Now, family life, I think there is a set time for a meal. And I always like to hear that families sit down, say, on a Sunday morning for a good Sunday roast where they can chat, forget about the television, forget about any music or mobile phones that might distract.
Personal devices that start bleeping at the most inopportune moments.
That's right. And, it's sort of, I like to have one day at least where a family can get together and act as a family. It'd be nice.
Polly, is that something which John is harking back to? We all would actually say that would be wonderful, but in reality, it's not going to happen.
No, I think what's heartening from John's perspective is actually that people still like the idea of eating together as a family, and it would seem from this survey that people still do. So 31% of people eat at a kitchen table, 36% of people will prepare two meals for their children, but that they still eat together. 36% say they eat together every day as a family. So actually, I think that although families are changing, and although what they eat might be changing, and how they prepare their food may be changing, I'm not sure that this idea that the family meal is on the wane is necessarily very accurate.
84% are apparently unable to recall seeing anything in the media that featured a family like their own in the last 6 months. Have they not been watching The Simpsons? No, sorry. In terms of that, again, in terms of advertising, of course, you mentioned a couple of things. Clearly, the OXO family was one of the kind of classic areas that was developed and updated. I mean, are we in that position, Polly, whereby the media simply reflects society but doesn't necessarily set the scene for this? I mean, I was also deeply saddened in terms of social media that there are lots of folk that believe that popular culture and social media believes that or suggests that other families are happier than they are, and it leaves them feeling negative about themselves and their family.
I think, yes, that is concerning, and I think what's really interesting is that this nature, this sort of idea that the family is always changing, that there has never been a time in which there was one type of model of family. There may have been an idea of what family should be, and that may have been perpetuated, through education and through culture and through the media. But actually, I think what you would have found, even in the sort of post-war period, where there was a much more sort of strong push on sort of more conventional family structures, even in that time, you would have found a lot of people whose own experience didn't conform with that. So there were, of course, lone parents, people who had, split up, people living in step families. But I think what's changed that's really significant is that the stigma around things like divorce, lone parenting, gay parenting, etc., has really changed. And so now people feel very much able to say, I don't recognise that that sort of ideal of the traditional family in my own family. Of course, there are lots of people, who do have a sort of fairly traditional structure of family, but many people don't, and they feel able to articulate that. And then also, when you factor into this sort of the effect of things like house prices, the cost of education, the cost of childcare, that these things are also changing sort of household units. So seeing lots of an increase in multi-generational families, so grandparents living with their children, helping with, young grandchildren, young adults aged between 20 and 34, about 25% of them now live at home with their parents. So actually the nature of what a family is now and a household is changing. It's probably always changed, but now I think people feel confident in articulating their own difference from the stereotype.
In terms of finding out further details about the We Are Family campaign, where's the best location to go, Polly?
The McCain Facebook page.
Marvellous. See, this is what comes when, I mean, when you have that sort of balance of work with Heston Blumenthal, a regular column in the FT Weekend magazine, the History Cookbook, written for the Renaissance Woman, as I frequently said, John. Polly Russell is a Renaissance Woman. John, any final questions for yourself?
Yes, yeah, so, Polly, I'll ask you one question. I think, well, my view is that go back a few years and the lady of the household acted as housewife and mother and did not work. Coming up to the present day, more and more of the ladies of the household do work, and they have extraordinary times of working whereby that they might not be able to sit down with their family or cook their family a meal at the appropriate hour. And this might be one of the reasons why families don't seem to be sitting down together with each other.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely true, John, that people, that's only, you know, there's increased numbers of women in the workplace. But I think what's changed, though, is also the kind of social expectations around who prepares food and who looks after children. So now, you know, it's much more accepted that, you know, dads, grandparents, young adults, that they might cook the food, that they may also take care of children. So, you know, I think you're right that it's no longer as likely that there'll be a sort of working dad, stay-at-home mum model, although there are many of those, but it's not, you know, as likely as it was in the past. But what that's meant is that, you know, different members of the family have taken over responsibility for childcare, for preparing meals. And I think, you know, what the evidence seems to suggest is that people still do regard eating together as being something that's valuable in family life.
Yes. It's been fantastic connecting with yourself. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link yourself with us this morning?
I've loved it.
Splendid. You see, a lead curator of contemporary politics and public life at the British Library and more. So will you be kind enough to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of how, as I said, we just reflect on our past, we look at the future. Will you be kind enough to return?
Anytime.
Brilliant. And actually, one little task. I was so tempted to go out with the Adams family, possibly the Partridge family, but I suspect you'd say, take Sister Sledge and We Are Family as the outro. Would you be happy with that piece of music?
Perfect.
See, in the kind of history of midweek drive-outs, I can see a situation whereby Lois and Tessa and Annie Snart can actually get together and do a cover version of We Are Family, and it would just knock the tops off Sister Sledge's original. But still, never mind, that's the family scenario. Speaking of the Snarts, Tessa's back with us. How are you, Tessa?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Hey, and do we have Leedy Jane as well, then?
Certainly do.
Hey! You see, John, it's just as well you liked Puppy Love when we played it early in the programme. Otherwise, how embarrassed would you be now if you'd actually said that was rubbish?
Well, exactly.
But it all works together splendidly. So, Leedy, let's talk to you first. Have you been listening to the programme as it's proceeded this morning?
So
she didn't even hear her Puppy Love being played on air, you see. So you actually, Tessa, have you been tuned into the programme? And indeed, did you catch my apology when I formally said, obviously, I was wrong, I was incorrect? Yes, you had quite rightly acknowledged me as the producer of Sound and Country Vision.
I actually didn't. I usually would be tuned in throughout, but I had to stop and do something just
Our key listeners from Glinton, who are even now breaking up like some kind of dodgy phone line, didn't even tune into the ears. It's just as well the podcast is going to be available shortly.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. Obviously, the weather in Glinton, little town just outside Peterborough, is vanishing a little bit. Anyway, John, chance now to speak to Leedy Jane. We heard her singing earlier with respect to Puppy Love. We can have another little tune if you wish in a few moments' time. What questions would you like to put to Leedy? I mean, I already shared with you and the listener the notion of how I thought the emotional fact of someone help me, please. meaningful stuff, that. Yeah. Thoughts of yourself, John?
One question. How did you first come into the entertainment business?
Do you know, it was... To actually do it singing professionally was by accident. I was actually singing at a karaoke in a pub, and then this dear lady in the pub who owned the pub said to me, "You must come and sing for me. You must come and do a show." And I thought to myself, I can't do that. I'm not good enough to do that. I just cannot. And I did. I made a debut appearance. I got a few songs together. And I did a show. And I was just absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of people that came to see me. And from then on, the phone started to ring. And that's how it all started for me. So I was quite amazed. Never thought it would happen. But my love for singing and all music has been really from a very tender age of about 3.
Well,
so,
Dean, my first recollection of anyone singing to any sort of popular song, shall we say, was way back to Alma Cogan. Now, that's...
Alma Cogan, beautiful.
It was a lovely voice, wasn't she? Beautiful voice. Absolutely. Like yours, my dear.
Thank you. That's ever so kind of you. Thank you so much. Bless you.
In fact, would you like to have a little touch of Alma Cogan, John, at this moment in time? I mean, you mentioned the great Alma. Obviously, if she's listening to this from Heaven FM, she'd say, ultimately, I wanted my career to be just like Leenie Janes. Sadly, that was never going to sort of manifest. But here's Alma Cogan with the strangely entitled Dreamboat.
You lovable dreamboat, the kisses you gave me set my dreams afloat. I would sail the 7 seas with you, even if you told me to go and paddle my own canoe. Sincerely, I love you so dearly, I'd follow you, darling, to any shore. Say that you'll be mine forevermore. You dreamboat, your lovable dreamboat, the kisses you gave me set my dreams afloat. I would sail the 7 seas with you, even if you told me to go. Sincerely, I love you so dearly.
you'll be mine forevermore.
Astounding. Clearly, as they weren't listening to the programme in the first, or the last hour, they will not appreciate the Elvis Presley task or challenge that I set to them. So I wouldn't expect them to actually come up with an Elvis Presley number to celebrate, obviously, well, commemorate 40 years since he passed away. However, the role is now going to be passed over to Tessa and her mum, Annie Jane, to stop me when I actually pass over a number of Elvis Presley that they'd like to hear. I don't know, they might hate Elvis Presley. I mean, Lainey, are you an Elvis Presley fan, or is it a case I couldn't stand the man?
I said to Tessa, why ever did you not mention an Elvis Presley number? Because obviously that would have just been really the icing on the cake for me today. I grew up absolutely loving Elvis Presley, and I actually had a poster on my wall at home in my bedroom when I was about 5 years old, the size of a double bed. I was crazy over him, and I still am, and he really always will be the king for me.
Well, this could be an interesting choice, then. I mean, Tessa obviously sort of going to be in this whole position thinking, look, you know, it was Glenn Campbell for me, Mum, so you should work our way through that. And David Cassidy somewhere down the list. But let's work our way through this. Wooden Heart, Way Down, Viva Las Vegas, Tutti Frutti, Trying to Get to You, Trouble, Too Much, The Wonder of You, The Next Step is Love, That's All Right, Teddy Bear, Suspicious Mind, Surrender, Stuck on You, She's Not You.
The Wonder of You, please.
Yep. I think we've had that stop there. It was quite clear. You know, the thumbs were not getting thumbs up from John. Here's the king.
When no one else can understand me, when everything I do is wrong, you give me hope and consolation. You give me strength to carry on. And you're always there to lend a hand in everything I do. That's the wonder of you. And when you smile, the world is brighter. You touch my hand and I'm a king. Your kiss to me is worth a fortune. Your love for me is everything. I guess I'll never.
Of course, Tessa, is it country or is it not country? I don't know whether it'll go into...
It's rock and roll, really.
It's rock and roll. Yeah. John, that was your favourite, although you have a liking for the corpsing Elvis in, no pun intended, obviously, in the Are You Lonesome Tonight number, where he couldn't stop himself from laughing.
That's right, yes. Absolute classic, that one.
So there we are. And actually... Lainey, can you remember where you were when you heard Tony Prince make the announcement, ladies and gentlemen, the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, is dead?
I'll never forget it, I'm afraid, Alex. I was 7 years old. I was playing in the garden with my friends, and my mum heard it on the radio. she waited for my friends to leave, and then she sat me down nicely with her arm around me, and she said, I've got something to tell you. And it was just awful. It was, I just cried and cried and cried, and I understand why she waited for my friends to leave, because we were such a musical household, but my friends were probably more worried about what was coming on television after their tea, or because it was the summer holidays, and I'll just never forget it. It ruined the rest of my holiday. Never forget it.
And yet people still say he's working in a chip shop somewhere, but we won't go there.
I hope he is. Frying fish and chips for people and making them laugh as he always did.
probably in Skegness. Leanie Jane and Tessa Snott, have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It's been wonderful and lovely to speak with you again. I have to.
Always positive from that perspective. John, do you think Where the Boys Are or Shoop Shoop? Which one would you go for?
Well, I'd go for Shoop Shoop, actually.
You would. Yeah, that's a very good choice, particularly as Cher could never match the wonderment of what we're about to actually hear from Leanie Jane. So I take it then you'll both be back with us in the very near future?
Yes, definitely. Most definitely.
You love me, I want to know. How can I tell if he loves me so?
Number 52. Yes, that's the number that Sir John Winner was given to the events diary for 20th of August through to the 26th of August. And at the Lincoln Drill Hall on Friday the 25th of August at 12 noon, you've got a literature talk and film on the prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Respected worldwide for her many novels, plays and biographies, Muriel Spark is probably best known for this short novel, The Creme de la Creme. For Scottish readers, one of its delights is the vivid recreation of Edinburgh and its double standards and Calvinistic rules. Jean Brodie is an unorthodox teacher in a very orthodox girls' school. Her free-thinking ideas and charm persuade her set of girls that the rules are there to be broken by the elite, with tragic results for herself and some of the girls. The film, of course, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, will be shown with Maggie Smith, not in attendance, but in the movie at 2:30 p.m. Of course, Gordon Jackson, Robert Stevens also in there, and both the talk and the film will take place in the auditorium of Lincoln Drill Hall. That's The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie at 12 noon on Friday the 25th of August. See, John, you thought I wasn't going to incorporate any John Wenham event story stuff, and look, there is. well even done. With authentic Scottish accent, well, perhaps not authentic, but...
A Scottish type accent.
Also up, Newark Castle on Sunday, the 20th of August. So that's this coming Sunday from 11 a.m. Newark Castle tours. And Newcastle sitting proudly next to the River Trent in the centre of Newark in Nottinghamshire. If you wish to actually have a tour, you've got an entrance fee of £5.50 for adults, £2.75 for under 16s, and you can take a guided tour of the castle's towers and dungeons, or indeed visit the Gilsrap Heritage Centre, where there are historic exhibitions on display. Gardens have been painstakingly even restored and won a Green Flag Award for their efforts. Contact Newark Castle 01636 655 765. That's 01636 655 765. So lots to do. And John, if people actually have got events that are taking place that they want to effectively get promoted with your good self, obviously Jekyll and Hyde the musical opens up very shortly at the Lincoln Cathedral between the 22nd of August and the 1st of September. How can they get in touch with you?
Quite simply, by emailing me on john.wenham, that's W-E-N-H-A-M, at sarinonline.co.uk.
And that's using that wonderful email stuff. Is there a telephone number that people can use as well? Just let's go a little fashion.
Well, I've just changed my office, and I don't know whether it's going to be a permanent number, so I won't give a phone
exactly.
number out at the
moment. Use the email, because you know these office changes, they can lead to all sorts of confusion. Thank you to Shaley McKenzie and Phil Leonis for their contributions to the programme earlier. Thanks to Tessa Snart and Leanie Jane. Thanks, of course, to Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox and Dr. Polly Russell, lead curator of public life at the British Library. Thank you, dear listener, for being there. And thank you, John Wenham, for taking part in Lincoln's first community radio station's Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Thursday, August the 17th, 2017. It's pretty much all over now, John.
Oh, dear.
Bar the shouting.
It goes quickly, doesn't it?
Well, a bit like life, but enjoy it whilst you're experiencing the whole sequence. Taking us around to the news, we have the joys of the great Gig in the Sky with Pink Floyd, plus a little touch of All Cried Out with Blonde featuring Alex Newell. So that's the way that we wrap up. I'll be back with the Midweek Drive next Wednesday with a whole heap of other goodies as well from that point of view, including the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra's Scott Harrison. He's the Chief Executive Officer. And indeed the return of Phil Lynas and a whole heap of other things. Don't forget, Sound and Country Vision Volume 11 is on this evening between 7 o'clock. I think Jeff Thompson's back tomorrow morning for The Breakfast Show. John, would you like to say au revoir?
Au revoir, and thank you very much.